From WUWMHD, Milwaukee Public Radio, I'm Bonnie North, and this is a special Project Milwaukee edition of Lake Effect. On today's program, we'll hear our Forum on Race Relations, taped Wednesday night on location at the Mitchell Park Domes in Milwaukee. For the past week, Project Milwaukee Black and White has examined the state of race relations in Milwaukee. Whether you call it segregation or separation, we've explored what it means to live in a city that is, in many ways, divided. As part of our Project Milwaukee series, we brought together a panel and an audience of 150 people to continue the conversation. Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke and Morning Edition host Bob Bach moderated the discussions. Our show today, as the forum was on Wednesday, is in three parts. The panel discussion leads off the show. Audience members seated at tables around the room were then asked to discuss several key questions. We'll hear reports from each of those tables. And finally, we'll get reaction from the panelists to what they heard from audience members. Our panel had five members. Enrique Figueroa is the director of the Roberto Hernandez Center at UWM and assistant to the provost for Latino Affairs. Howard Fuller was superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools from 1991 to 1995. He's now a leading advocate for education reform and director of the Institute for the Transformation of Learning at Marquette University. Mark Levine is senior fellow and was the founding director of the UWM Center for Economic Development. Paula Pennebaker is president and CEO of the YWCA of Greater Milwaukee. And Tim Sheehy is the president for the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. Mitch Tyke began by asking the panel the following question. When you hear someone say that Milwaukee is a segregated city, maybe even the most segregated city in the country, do you agree? And what does it mean to you? Tim Sheehy responded first.
When I think about the question, I think I look at it through an economic lens, and I realize it has much broader implications. But to say that this city is segregated or one of the most segregated cities is a real challenge in terms of our goal, which is to make this a great place from which people engage in commerce. And to do that, you have to be a city that's diverse. You have to be a city that draws on all the strengths that you have. In short, you have to be a port of human knowledge. And if you're going to do that, you can't do that from a base that people perceive as being segregated or, in fact, is segregated. So I would view that as a detriment to our ability to develop economically.
Do you think it's purely perception? Is it reality? Or does, in this case, especially for the business community, does perception equal reality?
I think in some perspectives, if you're recruiting people here, you're trying to keep people here, and they view it as a segregated community, that's a detriment, whether that's perception or reality. I think statistically, it probably has some validity to it, although I take exception when people point out cities like Salt Lake City and Portland and other markets that are not diverse to begin with. It's hard to segregate a community that isn't very diverse. So one of our assets is we're very diverse, but if we don't take advantage of that and leave ourselves segregated, then we're not taking that asset and turning it into an advantage.
I'm going to turn over here and ask Enrique Figueroa, when you hear someone say that Milwaukee is perhaps the most or among the most segregated communities in the country, do you agree with them, and what does that mean to you?
From my 7 years' experience here in Milwaukee, in talking to a variety of folks in a variety of different circles, it's become apparent to me that people certainly feel that it is a segregated city. And I would go one step further and say that people within the communities of color have that perception to a greater degree than individuals outside those communities. I think that if you look, as Mr. Sheehy just pointed out, that statistically, if you look at housing patterns, if you look at work patterns and such of that, you will see the validation of segregation. The important question to me is, how is it that we arrived at this point, and how is it that we move forward in minimizing that segregation? Secondly, let me say that within the Latino community, the academic community, we are beginning to talk about things of like, we no longer need to talk about race in black-white paradigm. The Latino community comes in all kinds of colors. We're a large minority now. We're becoming a larger and larger minority in many, many cities across this country. And we need to start thinking in terms of how we address this issue of segregation slash race in terms of a non-black-white paradigm, so that we do not, as a community or as a country, repeat the mistakes that we've done heretofore in addressing this new emerging Latino community.
So you're saying there's a risk in looking at segregation merely in terms, not to criticize the title of our series, but merely in terms of black and white, it's a more nuanced situation.
I would argue that it is, and it particularly is going to be much more important in the future because the demographics indicate that we're going to see larger and larger amounts of Latinos, both in Milwaukee and across our country.
Howard Fuller, is Milwaukee a segregated community in your eyes? And if that's the case, what does that mean when we say it's segregated?
Well, you know, the thing I worry most about is I think we're saddling this generation with another generation's arguments. And what I mean by that is when I was growing up in Milwaukee, I didn't go on the South Side unless there was a posse with me because black people didn't go on the South Side. But it's no longer true that there are no black people on the South Side. It's some of the things that are in our heads, it's no longer the reality in the city. And for me, quite frankly, the issue of economic segregation is more critical than racial segregation. Because what I'm concerned about is the fact that if you're poor in the city of Milwaukee, your options are so limited. But that if you have money and you are in Milwaukee, the reality is you got black people with money, Latino people with money, living all over the place. And one of the things in general I worry about is that when we put a racial prism on a problem that is a class base, we come up with racial solutions and they don't work because the fundamental problem isn't race, it's class. And it's how we treat that intersection that most concerns me.
Mark Levine, I want to bring you in on this conversation because you've done some work on segregation that involves both race and class. And so what Howard Fuller says, how does that bear out in your experience?
Well, I think that the points that both Tim and Howard made with regard to the economic basis of a lot of these disparities and the polarization that exists are really quite important points, and we need to underscore those. Where I would think I would kind of somewhat disagree with both is that while there's no doubt that the Milwaukee of Howard Fuller's youth is the city itself is substantially different, and that there are certain sort of neighborhoods that used to be excluded to groups that are no longer that way. If we look at the region as a whole, Milwaukee very much resembles the vision of America that was put forward in the 60s by the Kerner Commission when they talked about two societies, separate and unequal. If you look at, for example, the degree of black suburbanization in Milwaukee, it is less than any major metropolitan area in the country. The average, for example, across the largest metro areas in the country is about 40% of African Americans living in suburbs. In Milwaukee, it's 9%. It isn't even quite true, as Howard says, that if you have money, you can you probably can live anywhere in Milwaukee. But the bottom line is, middle class and affluent African Americans don't live anywhere in Milwaukee to a much greater extent than the middle class or the affluent black community in other metropolitan areas. They live in the central city. So we really do have a kind of a geographic polarization, particularly between city and suburb, that is both racial and economic, and I think we need to confront it in both ways. So I agree with Howard completely that we can't sort of look at this just as a racial issue. We have to look at the social class dimensions, but we have to have a regional perspective that really cuts to the fact that there is this overlap between race and class in Milwaukee.
Paula Pennybaker, when you hear someone say that Milwaukee is a segregated city, first of all, does your experience bear that out, and what does that statement mean to you?
I think, yes, I do believe that the perception is real. But I think, and I don't disagree with anything I've heard, I do believe, though, that when I think about segregation, unlike what Howard just said, I think we need to think about the region and not just the city of Milwaukee. And to Tim's comments about attracting business and having an area that people want to come and settle in and grow, I think We need to look at the whole metropolitan area because people are fluid in their comings and goings. And they don't do everything right in the city limits, and I believe the dynamics associated with them moving about need to be taken into account. And I think because of some of those dynamics and how people who move from the city out into the suburbs, either physically or just in the normal course of their business, can sense there is a great sense of unwelcomeness if you move in and out of the city throughout the course of just living one's life. So,
well, and I want to stick with that notion because, you know, we use the umbrella term race relations, but this is about more than just how polite people are to each other when they're at the mall or in line at a Brewers game. What do you think is the state of race relations in Milwaukee? African Americans and whites and Hispanics and all the other groups that make up this metropolitan area. I've heard, and I know our reporters have heard in the course of doing this, that phrase, unwelcomeness. What is your sense for how people of different backgrounds are getting along here?
Well, I think in terms of your first question about what's the state of race relations in Milwaukee, I think the state of race relations here is fine as long as you don't talk about it. I think there is a level of naivete in this area about racism that's disturbing. You get the reaction when you bring up issues about racism most often is that, well, I don't see that. I don't believe that's true. And that's usually from people who, first of all, wouldn't necessarily be victims of it. So, one, you know, I feel forced to ask the question, how would you know or how could you know? So I think that people are getting to be a little bit more comfortable. I applaud WUWM for having this series. I think there are a number of things that have happened within the last couple of years in the city that suggest to me that there is an appetite to discuss this more, but I think we have a really long way to go in that regard.
As long as I'm on this side of the table, let me just go down the line and ask Tim Sheehy whether your experience would bear out what Paula just said. You know, do you find a reluctance of people within the business community to talk about this elephant in the room, if you will, the nature of race relations?
I mean, I don't know that I find a reluctance. I've lived in Milwaukee with exception of a couple tours of duty overseas and some other places all my life. And I think that I wouldn't be truthful if I didn't think there was racism here. In some respects, but I don't think it defines this community. I think it's an issue, it's a critical issue, but it doesn't define it. I think from, again, the perspective of an employer, which I'm trying to bring to the table here, employers can't stand that. They can't locate in an environment, they can't have, they can't attract and retain the asset they have, which is talent. And companies are getting more diverse globally. They're getting more diverse in terms of their talent base. And if you look at the population that's coming out that they're going to hire from, that's going to create jobs, it's a very diverse population. And if you're in a community and if you're running a company where that marks who you are as a company or who you are as a community, you're quite frankly not going to be able to compete. And that's why I think in our organization in particular spends a lot of time on education. When I look at the statistics and I see that in the city of Milwaukee, 10% of the African-American population of working age has a four-year degree or better, and 7% of the Hispanic population has a four-year degree or better, we're going to have a really tough time integrating that population economically. And so it's critically important that we at least give people the same starting point, which is the ability to participate in the economy. And if we can't do that, I think there are a lot of other issues that pile on top of that and make it very difficult to be an attractive place to live, work, and play.
Howard Fuller, you talked about not wanting to have the same arguments and talk about the same paradigm we had 30, 40, 50 years ago. Can we have the discussion about economic mobility without also addressing the issue of race relations here?
Now, the thing about race relations, here's my problem. I don't know what people are talking about because what is it that we use to determine if race relations is good or bad in a community? What are the key benchmarks that you can use to say we have good race relations? And one of the questions we should ask ourselves is, how many more conversations are we going to have about this? I mean, we had a few years ago, we had the same thing. You know, all the black people got together hollering at white people. They was mad, this, that. Is that what constitutes race relations in a community? I don't think so. I think it's an issue of power. I think it's an issue of, do people of color, are people of color in a position in this community to exercise power? Because at a certain point, to me, if you just talk about people talking with each other, I ain't for that. I mean, I think it's all good for us to talk and all that. The question is, on a day-to-day basis, are you able to exercise power over your lives? Can you make decisions about where your kids go to school? Do you have a job that affords you an opportunity to live with dignity and worth? Are you somewhere placed in the political structure in a community so you can impact the decisions that are being made in a community? And unless we go to things like that, I just have to admit, I don't know what we're talking about.
I want to get your comments, Enrique Figueroa, but first I want to ask real quickly, Mark Levine, who's kind of our numbers guy. We talk about how to quantify segregation. Can you quantify race relations? Are there benchmarks? Are there ways of saying, you know, in 1965 it was this, in 1975 it was this, and today in 2009 it's that?
Yeah, you can sort of do that. You can, you know, track public opinion. But I come down very strongly on the side of Howard Fuller's comments about, you know, putting this in terms of structural, economic, social power kinds of issues as opposed to the, you know, and I don't mean to denigrate anybody in the area of race relations or try, you know, the kind of kumbaya, let's all get together. That's all important. I mean, I think obviously any kind of, you know, multicultural, multiracial kind of outreach issues are all very important. But the bottom line here for me in terms of understanding the perniciousness of what I call segregation in Milwaukee is that, you know, we need to recognize, and it's only even recently that as a community we've begun to acknowledge this. There's been a lot of denial around here of the long list of racial disparities and polarization indicators in which, not that, you know, Milwaukee is sort of bad, like a lot of cities are bad, but that we are at the bottom at on indicator after indicator.
Enrique Figueroa, I want to bring you into the conversation, bring you back into the conversation, and ask you, first of all, to comment on what everybody else has said. Is this to you an issue of race relations? Is it an issue of economic mobility? Is it an issue of power over one's own life?
All of the above. I'm an economist by training, and I think one of the things that people, I hope, consider is that the basis of race and racism in our country historically was how to divvy up the wealth and how the accumulation of wealth was very much skewed in one direction as compared to the other direction. Let me just also say that it's very, very important. I teach an Introduction to Latino Studies course. I run this Latino nonprofit leadership program, and it's clear that students want and desire something to know about race history in our country. Even though I heard Howard say that we're kind of perhaps putting our old generation in the community, I see it. Kids do not see race as much as we used to, but they want to know about the implications and the historical development of that. And I think the more people are aware of that history, the more comfortable and the better prepared they're going to be to address the issue. Let me just lastly say that what Mr. Sheedy pointed out, the low numbers of African Americans and Latino kids that are in our community that have bachelor's degrees. The real question is, why is that? Is it just because we do not have the intellectual capabilities of achieving that, or is there other structural elements that are in our school system that is somehow preventing, at a very different rate, these individuals from obtaining those kind of degrees?
Paula Pennybaker, it's significant. I would gather that the mission of the YWCA is, at least the first half of it, is eliminating racism. Why is it eliminating racism as opposed to, say, generating economic mobility?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I think what Dr. Fuller said about people getting together and just kumbaya and talk about race isn't necessarily a way to get things changed. However, Dr. Figueroa just said about people understanding the historic nature of why things are the way they are, I think is very important to being able to get people to move forward. I think a lot that I am not a native Milwaukeean, and what I have learned since I've been here is that we are a community of people that has long memories and don't seem to really be able to get past the memory of bad things in terms of how those memories help us shape our perceptions about people. I think about, you know, the legacy of Chief Breyer, for an example, was just resurrected a couple years ago in response to some of Chief Haggerty's struggles. What would Chief Breyer do? I mean, who cares? Everything I heard about what the man did wasn't good, so who cares what he would do? I mean, that type of behavior, that holding on to things that aren't constructive to the movement of relationships.
That's Paula Pennebaker speaking as part of the Project Milwaukee Black and White Forum on Race Relations. We'll have more from the forum after a break. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.